I promised more around communities of care, and wow, this is my favorite tiny awakening to date. Welcome to Tiny Awakenings, where I, your host, Reagan Williams, share my unedited aha moments, offering solutions to life's problems or new interpretations of the typical. Essentially, I'm sharing with you verbal journal entries I've recorded over the past year in hopes that only one of us has to go through tough situations to learn these simple lessons. But hey, maybe we're learning and growing together. And for that, I thank you. This is so important. One of my colleagues said, it's so tricky for some folks to imagine something that they haven't experienced yet in their organization or just at all. And it really made me think, like, Reagan, why do you expect people to have, who haven't experienced unconditional positive regard or unconditional love, mentorship, identity-based healing, to have a deep compassion for themselves, let alone other people? And why do I not reflect more about how my communities have impacted how I perceive the world around me, all the diverse perspectives that have created who I am? Like, I didn't just hear about people's perceptions. I had to navigate this world as a very multifaceted, marginalized person. Like, I have multiple marginalized identities, whether it be, you know, experiences of sexual assault or violence, as a woman, or my experiences of being queer and growing up in a religion that wasn't friendly to an identity that I could not change and I could not control, whether that being me being Black and growing up in a community where adults felt comfortable saying things to me that they absolutely should not have, or treat me a certain way and, like, give me the insight of what harm racism can really do to, like, an individual, let alone a child. Like, I got to firsthand have all of those different experiences. And I hate that I say got to, because it's not a privilege. It was definitely a burden, a mental, physical, psychological burden to have to carry all of those identities, not have, you know, the privilege of just consistent parenting either, because my parents had to go out and work and stress about bills. And, you know, like, all of those different things put me in a position to experience things firsthand. But that's not everybody's experience. Like, a lot of people do have to be in community with Black people to understand our plight, to read our stories, to learn our history, have to be in the presence of Native folks to understand what their predicament is today, hundreds of years after a massive genocide in North America, contextualizing what that means in our history, that we're not taught that, and what that teaches people, not learning about Native Americans, what it means to be gender conforming, like, all of these different things are maybe stories that we have to hear from other people, and all of that perspective gathered makes us ask, like, oh my God, like, I'm missing pieces of my humanity. I'm missing pieces of compassion for myself. I'm missing some dynamic pictures here, and can you please help me, as all of these other people, and sharing statistics and sharing research and sharing their stories have gotten me to this point where I can critically think, like, I want more, and make that big ask of ourselves. And sometimes it's not this big systematic thing, right? Sometimes we just want to transform for ourselves, you know, to be a better mother than our mothers were, or to be a better friend than we were, because we realized that we hurt people, or we were hurting ourselves by being distant. Like, there's all of these different things, but these are examples of big ask. And what it takes to make a big ask is recognizing something big and telling yourself that I am capable of having more than I have today, whether it be knowledge or emotional intelligence, or I deserve more. I deserve a better job. I deserve better relationships. I deserve a significant other that respects me and listens to me and helps me. I deserve a partner. Like, making those big asks in life, what the heck did it take for me to make those big asks, and who was around to cultivate all of this change in me? And why the heck haven't I asked myself those questions? Because I did need to see unconditional positive regard. I did need to understand unconditional love. I did need mentorship, and I did need to explore my identities in order for me to make bigger and bigger and bigger asks of myself. I did. And that all comes from a community of care. A slew of people across my entire life that have cared enough to nurture me in some way, to ask me or challenge me to grow. And I haven't been able to articulate the impact of communities of care that I've had or cultivated for my own growth and transformation, and recognize those environments that were central points of healing for me. I talked to someone like years ago. They had a family member. She was young. She was like just off the rails, like doing a lot of things to like self-sabotage. And, you know, this woman's like, I'm getting tired of her. I don't know what to do with her. She's like, she doesn't seem like she's grateful. She complains every day about going to work. She spends her money frivolously for someone who doesn't have somewhere to stay. Like, just all of these big things. And I told her, I was like, she's in this predicament because people didn't rally around her as a child. Like, she didn't have the support to evolve, you know, and think about the ways that she's treating other people. I was like, just care for her. Love her. Love on her. Show her what love means. Show her what unconditional positive regard means. Show her empathy. Show her some grace. And in doing that, you are going to help her reimagine how she can interact with other people. Maybe what she deserves out of this life. And I shared a bit of my story, like being, you know, like a, I hate to say it, but like being like a suicidal preteen teenager that was skipping school, doing just a bunch of things that I absolutely should not have been doing, just doing a lot of my own self-sabotaging and in a lot of hidden, covert ways. And going from that to being someone who literally had to be pushed to go to college, and being, I mean, at the time I was in school, and being in school and like thriving, being a recognized advocate and activist in my community, being a peer educator, doing faculty trainings on diversity and equity and inclusion, like being this like model citizen, right? Like, I went from being a shit show myself to being a model citizen and contributing to my community, right? In really meaningful ways. And she was like, how are you able to do that? And I'm like, the way that I'm just telling you now. A lot of people had to rally around me even when I didn't feel like I deserved it. A lot of people had to care for different parts and different aspects of me for me to make to for me to make that big ask in myself. For me to ask myself, like, okay, you are a hot mess right now. Please get it together. Please, like, I'm asking you and I'm begging you to find your purpose and run and run with it. Find something to really, really live for. Find something to get that gets you excited again. Find a way to embody all of the things that you believe, your morals, like your values, your care for your community. Don't just care about them, do something about it. Like I had to really suffer in a place for a long time for me to make those big asks of myself, because I realized something clicked. Enough people cared about me for me to be like, oh wow, like, okay, this is it. And I need to figure out how to do something with this life so I can stop hurting myself and stop hurting the people around me. And I have since made so many other big asks of myself. And I think sometimes when we felt abandoned in the past, we like to take credit for all of our growth. But even though I felt abandoned, I was adopted, I was mothered, I was mentored, I was educated, I was held accountable, I was trusted, I was held, I was affirmed, I was given opportunities, I was comforted by so many different people, my peers included, and my ability to hear other people's perspectives, they grew. They grew through that care. My ability to empathize with others, just to empathize with other people, that grew because people cared enough and trusted me enough to tell me what was going on with them and invite me to tell them what was going on in me. My ability to think critically about my own experiences and, you know, the academic materials that I had to sit with helped me grow because I learned how to be in deep community with other people from different walks of life. I maybe unconsciously began to seek the advice of mentors, of my elders, of scholars, on a subconscious level because those things were being offered to me. I began to find and intentionally seek the wisdom in my peers, which I so obviously continue to do through this podcast. And that everybody that's been on this show have been part of my community in some way or another. Real transformation of any kind happens in and through communities of care. Real transformation of any kind happens in and through communities of care. You cannot do it alone. We are all, in essence, entangled with each other. And I've talked about this concept before. And, you know, way, way, way back in the day when I first started the podcast, like Ubuntu, I am because we are. Other human beings taught me what it meant to be a human being. And some of that teaching wasn't always good. But do I want my life to be good? Do I want to care for people? Do I want to show up? Am I allowed to critique how people treat me? Yes, but I don't have to follow in their footsteps. I want to follow in the footsteps of all the people that have shown up for me when they didn't have to, when it wasn't their responsibility to, when they found in themselves a responsibility, a civic duty to show up for their community, for the people around them. That's what I want to model my life after. And that's when people really get to change, you know? When I was in school, I learned about restorative justice. And it was so radical to me. And quick, it's basically an opportunity for people to come together, victims of harm and those who have perpetrated or caused harm, come together in community with other support systems to figure out a more just way to maneuver through the harm that was caused. And for the person that perpetrated the harm, that means taking accountability for having to sit through the stories and all of the ramifications for the consequences of the actions that they've done. It means really kind of trying to push them through a transformation to say like, you're more than your mistakes, you're more than your actions, you can do better. It's giving somebody that's harmed a place in a judicial system, a place in a community to express their harm, to the harm that has been perpetrated against them, to ask for not just like, oh, throw this person in jail. Like, no, I need something real from you. You stole a source of income from me. I need financial help. You stole a sense of comfort from me. I need you to look me in my eyes and tell me personally, not a judge, not a cellmate, not anybody else. I need you to tell me that you're sorry. I need you to understand what you did to me. I need to express myself to you. I need to experience some type of empathy in this. So basically, like, that's what I learned. That's what I saw through my restorative justice training. And I learned how to facilitate those types of conversations. And it took an entire community. There's community circles for this. And this isn't just like a new concept. This has been around since the dawn of civilization, probably, which I know it's a ancient Native American practice. I'm sure people have been doing it just across the world because there were no prisons at a certain time, if we can actually imagine that, right? That transformation has to come through community. It has to come through dialogue. Queering our views of care allows us to destroy the prison industrial complex and become restorative justice practitioners and abolitionists and people who don't just think of punishing people, but helping them grow, giving them resources, helping them change. Real transformation of any kind happens in and through communities of care. Helps me think about like queer kinship. Our traditional caregivers are not and should have never been like the only source of care that we had to rely on, whether that be single moms, single dads, or a nuclear family where you're just looking at your mom and your dad to do everything and be everything to you. Now, granted, they're your caregivers. They owe you a lot. They brought you into this world, right? They brought you into their home. They owed you a significant gravitas of care. I'm not saying that. But relieving parents from that sole ownership, and I mean ownership, because boy, does that relationship sometimes come in a sense of like authoritarian nature over children's bodies, but relieving parents from that sole ownership allows us to gather in the development of the next generation. It helps us gather in family and community to create more creative, impactful ways to raise children. Being open to stewardship of knowledge, being thoughtful aunties and uncles, being resourceful neighbors, being providers and sources of spiritual sustenance and substance, places of refuge, being places of housing and food. If I just had more people in my life that, you know, relied on me, how beautiful could that make me feel, to feel like I'm mothering, even though I didn't give birth? These were all really real things. And in industrialization, blame it on all of the other things that created a nuclear family that was supposed to do everything on their own, when I really do think it does take a village to raise a kid. This is a prime example of a community of care that could be a real thing for our communities, for our nieces and nephews, oh, my sweet little babies, for ourselves, creating community for ourselves. I think that's like something that you have to learn how to do in very Western and individualistic societies, is to grow up and realize that you need people. like we're brainwashed to think that we have to go live out on our own and buy our own apartments and get our own things when we should really just be sharing resources in a more strategic way, not fueling capitalism through our own blood, sweat, and tears and self-sacrifice. Like, sharing resources is real. Sharing emotional capacity is real. People offering you education and knowledge without having to pay tens of thousands of dollars and be in student debt, that is real. Just joining a book club can be a community of care. Your coworkers can be a community of care if you tear down this Western white male idea of professionalism. Your communities of care are just sitting there waiting for you to find them. And I know I say this and like you might think like, what are you talking about? Like so many of us, including myself, I feel very alone a lot of the time. And I think a part of that is like, you know, we see a lot of people every day on our screens, but we don't get to feel them. We don't get to touch them. We don't get to have really deep conversation with them. You're a weirdo if you cry on the internet. We don't get to have really deep, impactful conversations with each other. And this is a part of me taking care of myself, honestly, like is having an audience. And hopefully I can be a part of your community of care, listening to me, finding mutuality in our stories, having your own aha moments because of this transaction, if you will. Right? I want to give you something worth listening to, and you listen, and thank you. I love you. I'm sharing love with you. I'm sharing hope with you. What hope looks like to me. This might seem really ridiculous, but I thought about, like, I don't really like to smile. I think I look prettier with a straight face, but I smile a lot and I laugh a lot. And a lot of that is because that's how I communicate my love. I communicate my love through laughter. And it feels real and it feels deep. And it feels profound that I let myself, you know. And I let myself because so many other people allowed me to. So many other people allowed me to be soft and to peel back the layers and be sweet and cry. Someone told me last week, like to a large group of people, I was just in the room. She was talking to me though. But crying is therapy. And it is. And her just saying that gave the whole room permission. You have permission to feel and to release and to be, not to perform. And I hope I give you all permission and to do that with me, to share your thoughts with me in my DMs, to share these tiny awakenings with your friends, to spark conversations in yourself. All of the things, because that's what our community does for us. And I want to think more about what my community means to me, far past, you know, just having them as guests and sharing their wisdom with you, but really thinking about what my community of care has looked like. It's been, and I can say some now, like it's been people, like friends that I grew up with, their parents having a hot, warm cooked meal and sitting at a dinner table with them. As a full family, I didn't get to see that in my house, but I got to see that at so many other people's houses and know that any night that I did want a home cooked meal, I could probably go find one. And that I was welcome into so many people's homes in such an intimate way, you know, that really made me feel taken care of. My community of care has looked like my peers who were suffering in silence themselves, coming together and rallying with each other to say, like, you look sad. And some of our self-deprecating jokes or like our sense of dark humor does come from a place of suffering and rallying together. I think of my best friend right now, and I love her so much. She was a huge part of my community of care. I think about teachers along the way that really validated me and my intelligence and gave me a mic to speak up for myself, helped me find resources to join clubs like Speech and Debate and Model UN and Youth in Government and learn more about the world and express my opinions at an early age. All of those people, those volunteers, were my community of care. My professors were my community of care. All the people that looked at me and told me, hey, I know that you're queer, but another human being can never tell you what your afterlife is gonna look like. Only God can do that. Those were moments of deep care and solidarity. In all of those unique ways, I've been able to transform. Through the word and wisdom of other people, I have been able to evolve.